Hey, listeners, this is your host, Abir Sichter, and welcome back to Local Global Leaders. This episode is titled, I Will Always Do What's Best for Students, and I had the honor of interviewing McKenna Dowell, the student body president at the University of Kentucky. In our conversation, President Dowell shares her journey from cheerleading co-captain in high school to student government leader at the largest university in Kentucky. And she talks about how her time as an athlete really shaped the way she transitioned into government and approaches teamwork, advocacy, and representation. She also emphasizes her governance around transparency and affordability and mental health, and how these are key issues affecting students at UK and, of course, students across the country. And if you listen closely, you might be able to hear President Dowell kind of lightly clapping as she emphasizes some of her most powerful points. I think it goes to show that cheerleader spirit, it never really leaves you. Now, here's our conversation. Greetings, listeners. This is Abir Sichter here with another episode of Local Global Leaders. I'm here at WUKY Studio with McKenna Dowell, the student body president at UK. McKenna, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
It's awesome. You're the second UK president I've gotten to interview. Just I always like to highlight like youth leaders and emerging leaders. Yeah. So it's been really great to get to meet you and to hear about your story.
Yes, absolutely. I'm so excited. We're in the midst of election season right now. So and there's only one ticket running. So I pretty much know who my successor will be, which is really exciting. They're amazing. So
that's gotta be, you know, like democracy is great, but it's gotta be good for like easier transition.
I know. I was like, you get it really easy compared to me. Yeah. But no, they're awesome, man. I'm so excited to see what they'll do in this role next year. So
that's great. Well, we appreciate that shout out to your successor already. Yeah. To start us off, we want to hear your story. I like to always ask, what is your 6-word story? The 6 words you'd say to describe yourself.
I think a lot of people would describe me as outgoing, or at least I try to be. I'm really passionate. I'm really hardworking. I would say a lot of my friends also describe me as loyal and honest, and I think I'm very determined as well.
Awesome. Those are great characteristics, great ones for a leader.
Thank you.
Before college, what were your early experiences in leadership? In particular, what was your like first leadership role?
Yeah. Prior to college, I really didn't have a lot of leadership roles, not just because like they weren't, you know, exposed to me or I didn't seek them out, but I was an athlete all my life. And so I really focused on pursuing cheerleading. That was my passion. And I guess the only really leadership roles that I had was being the co-captain of my cheer team my senior year of high school. And then I did something with National Honor Society. I think I might have been the vice president, but I'm not really sure. It's been a minute. So
it's funny. I remember all those high school accolades like, oh, I'll get all these things and get into college. And I'm like, I don't even know what I was
doing. I don't know what it was. Yeah.
So with athletics and cheerleading, like how did those like teach you how to be a leader?
Yeah, I mean, being the co-captain my senior year really taught me like you have to speak up for the individuals that you're representing. You know, a lot of the younger girls had no idea what was going on or they were really confused and sometimes they would get very emotional and upset, and just trying to be a voice of reason for them and then go to my coach and kind of express their views. I think that translates very well into leadership, especially as a team player. You have to learn teamwork and really just, you know, advocating for everyone around you. So I think it is a really good translation. Also, I'm very hardworking. I'm competitive. So it kind of helps out whenever it comes to elections.
That's awesome. And am I correct? You went to high school in Louisville?
Yes, right outside of Louisville. So I went to South Oldham High School in Crestwood or Oldham County.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting because like, I was just curious, you know, what brought you, you know, people, of course, the choice between U of L and UK. What brought you to UK over going to Louisville?
Yeah, I think I wanted to get out. Love my parents, but I wanted some independence. And neither of them had attended college, and my sister stayed home for her undergrad. So I kind of wanted to have the experience of just getting out of the house. And really what sealed the deal for me was getting on the stunt team at UK. I was a student athlete my freshman year. So when they offered me a spot to be on the team, that was just like the golden ticket. I knew I was going to UK, and yeah, it's awesome.
And what's the stunt team? What's that?
Yeah, it's kind of like all-girl cheer. It's a one-on-one competition, so you have one team and another team on the other side of the mat, and you are doing the same skill, and you are executed on who does it best. And you are awarded the point, and it's a point system of who gets the highest points. So
it's awesome that early experience in cheerleading and like that activity in athletics, like that's awesome that inspired you to be a leader. I'll say I did the opposite. I went to U of L instead of UK. Which, like, I'm from Eastern Kentucky, but I remember people being so mad at me about it.
Right.
You know, a lot more UK fans, but I can see why.
Well, you're here now, so that's all that matters, you know? Yep. L's down. No, I'm kidding. But
I was at U of L when we won the men's basketball NCAA.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was a fun time.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine that. I'm praying this year, but I don't think it'll happen. I think I might need to, you know, come back to Kentucky in a few years and see how we're doing. So.
Yeah. Like with that, with what you were doing in high school and athletics and cheerleading, like what led you in college to kind of enter student government?
Yeah. Honestly, I decided near the end of my freshman year, which I guess would have been spring of 2023, that I didn't really want to be on the stunt team. Competing at a D1 level for an SEC school is really cutthroat. It's very competitive, and I was not used to that kind of atmosphere. So I wanted to experience college elsewhere, you know, just seek out all the opportunities and, you know, things that were available to me that my family never had. So I decided to leave the stunt team and not return for my sophomore year. And a friend of mine had reached out. He was in a fraternity and said, there's some openings for student government, and I know you're a political science major. You should look into it. So I applied online, and I got an interview about a week later. I slept through my first interview, which I probably shouldn't say, but it's okay. Everyone has those times. And I went on the interview, and I got the job. So I was the deputy chief of staff for SGA my sophomore year.
Oh, nice. Are you a fan of the TV show The West Wing?
I have heard so much about it, but I haven't watched it. I've watched Suits, and I've seen Designated Survivor and all of those things, but I need to watch that one.
Awesome. Well, there's one of my favorite characters, Josh Lyman. He's deputy chief of staff. But yeah, so that's a great job to start.
Yeah, I need to watch it.
Yeah. So it's cool then, like, you starting off in that operational behind-the-scenes role, how did that help you as student body president?
Yeah. I think for me, I was really shy and timid. I had no idea what I was doing. So I kind of sit back and listened to a lot of people, and I watched how they led, specifically the president then. Her name was Lizzie Horning, and she was phenomenal. She knew when to speak and what to say, and I just admired her so much. I thought, one day, that's what I want to do. And so I went to Lizzie. She was such a great mentor and, you know, gave me all the right steps and advice on what I should take and what I should do to eventually get to a high leadership role. So I think just sitting back and listening first was really beneficial to now being the president. So
that's awesome. Getting to be in that, like, that behind the scenes role, like leading you to be where you are now.
Yeah.
It's interesting that, like, I read that you won the presidency with the largest voter turnout in UK's like government history and by like a really like large margin. Like, how did it feel to, like, you know, win with that victory, and what does that like represent to you?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That was the craziest day ever. I know I'm 21, so I have a lot of milestones to, you know, get through, but I think I'll always remember that day. And I remember my vice president and I, Jackson, were campaigning, and we were just really stressed out before election day. So I called Lizzie and asked her for some advice. And she said that it'll always come down to who wants it the most. And so we just gave election days everything that we had. And we then went into tabulations, which is in the Senate chamber. And for anyone that's in SGA, it's nerve-wracking running for a position. But I remember sitting there and watching them type out the vote count and then highlighting our name. And it was just amazing. And I immediately called my dad. I'm a daddy's girl, so I immediately called him. He said he was on the Zoom, so he already knew. But him and my mom had surprised me at the student center right after. So they drove from Louisville, and getting to celebrate with them and seeing how proud they were. You know, my mom was displaced until she was 6 years old and never got to go to college and was a teen mom. So, you know, watching everything just become full circle was really, really amazing.
Wow, that's an amazing moment and just so meaningful. Such a great, like, personal story and a great message for a democracy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess it sounds like you said there's only one ticket running now. It sounds like your successor will beat you on the
right
margin, I guess, right?
Yes. I mean, he's going to have 100%. Yeah. So a little mad about that, but it's all right.
That's fun. And what are the biggest struggles you've encountered in your leadership journey?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is, you know, being the president and being at this level and serving roles in different capacities, I am able to sit in meetings where I'm exposed to information that a lot of other students are not. So that definitely influences how I vote in board meetings or, you know, what I prioritize within our student government. And a lot of students may not understand why I'm, you know, making these decisions or voting in a certain way. I try to be as transparent as possible, but there are times where certain things are confidential and I can't really share that information. So I definitely understand why students, you know, may get frustrated with me. I was in their, you know, shoes last year and I had no idea what was going on. So just trying to explain to them, you know, I will always do what's best for students, and that is at the forefront of everything that I do.
Is it like, I'm guessing, is it like kind of tough to hold on to that or like keep those secrets, I guess, or like have, you know, yeah, figuring out how to be transparent?
Yeah, it is. I didn't really know, you know, what I could share or what I couldn't in the beginning. And my advisors for SGA, they're amazing. They sat me down and said, there are certain things that, you know, you can't really share, or at least like hold it close to your chest until it's made public. So being able to decipher, you know, what is confidential and what I can share with students has been a little difficult. But at the end of the day, just always remembering that, you know, if I have to keep this a secret, or if I, you know, can't really share this for another week or so until it's made public, I'm doing what's best for students at the end of the day. So. Mm.
I know earlier this year, President Obama revealed that, well, he teased supposedly that there might be aliens, a big secret. So do you have any big secrets at UK that you
oh, my gosh. I'm trying to think. I really don't know of any. I know that there are, like, we've had dinners and things at different places on campus that I never knew existed, which is really cool. But, no, I was just talking to, you know, the individual that's running for president right now, and I told him we need to have like a secret handshake or, you know, make something secret for all the presidents. But no, there's really been nothing that has been like revelating or anything like that, which is kind of surprising. I feel like it's a small little political realm, so there would be some like hidden gems, but
that's funny. And in addition to those struggles, do you have examples or experiences with toxic leadership that you've experienced?
Yeah, I think some of the most, you know, challenging leaders I've encountered have been individuals that don't really listen first, and they just tend to kind of, you know, act before they hear, you know, their constituents or their peers' perspectives and opinions. And that's something that I learned my sophomore year, is watching Lizzie and watching how she led. She always listened first and then acted on that. So I personally love sitting down with my peers in exec and Senate and SGA and just getting to hear their stories, their ambitions, their concerns, everything like that. So then I can decide what to do moving forward. And that's the biggest piece of advice I would give to anyone that wants to be a leader. I'm not perfect, but that I think is a really important trait.
And what would you say is like your kind of tease it there, I guess, your leadership style, your leadership philosophy?
Yeah, I think I just try to be a friend. And there have been times where it's bit me in the butt, you know, but I never want anyone to look at me as like a boss or a CEO or anything like that. We're all, you know, in SGA as a team. And especially being an athlete, I've seen how teamwork can, you know, do great things. So I always try to be there for everyone in exec and everyone in Senate, you know, as small as it may be, just asking someone how their day is or, you know, what can I do to relieve some stress off you? Those are just small things that people will remember. As some people say, people will always remember how you treat them and how you make them feel. So no matter what we get done, if we don't accomplish anything, I want people to walk away from student government knowing that they felt welcomed and that they could be their authentic self.
That's great. And I think with what you said about listening kind of addresses this a bit, but I want to know more about like how you empower members of your team, but also your fellow students and, you know, to be a part of student government and to like, you know, just really have their voice heard at UK.
Yeah, I will say I have never really experienced anyone in SGA like slacking. You know, a lot of these people run for these positions and have to campaign and get elected. And then our executive members go through an interview process and a selection process. And I think everyone just has a love for what they're doing. You know, they want to make life better for students on our campus and make our campus a better community. So I've never had any issues with that. I think as far as fellow students go, I live with 8 girls and none of them are in student government, which is a nice separation. but I always tell them, you know, get involved and stay informed. Everything that's happening at the university level does impact you in some way, whether it's, you know, the decision to buy some land right off campus that may take down your favorite restaurant or academia things. You know, just stay informed. And if you need to advocate, you can always come to me and I will be sure to express all students' concerns.
That's great. It's great to be that advocate and to empower those people. With my own kind of leadership theory, I have what I call my three M's: being an effective motivator, a competent manager, and a supportive mentor. How do you see those three roles? Like, do you see them as separate things or all tied together? And how do you like incorporate them in your leadership?
Yeah, I think a lot of leaders, you know, can focus more on one route, and then there are some that, you know, really encompass all of them. For me, I would say that I definitely want to be a mentor more than anything. A friend, I want to be someone that they can reach out to and, you know, express anything that's on their mind and know that I'm going to be there for them and I'm going to be a resource. As far as a motivator goes, just staying optimistic. You know, it's really tough in today's time with everything that's happening, especially with higher education. So being able to, you know, see the positives and really hone in on those and focus on those. And then what was the last one you said?
Manager.
As far as being a manager, I think that it just comes down to delegation. And that's something that I've personally struggled with. I'm a very independent person, and my dad and my mom always knew that I would never ask them for help. I bite off more than I can chew, and then I get stressed out about it. But being in this role, I've really learned how to delegate. I can't do, you know, 120 people's jobs, and I have them there for a reason, and they want to be there and they want to help. So, you know, meeting with them, checking in on them, seeing if they need anything from me, but also saying, hey, can you do this for me, has been really beneficial to what our team has accomplished this year.
And I imagine being like your time in athletics and being like a co-captain that's your team and also as deputy chief of staff, that probably helped you figure out a lot about delegating, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Especially, you know, being in athletics, you can't do, you know, the entire stunt or an entire sequence just by yourself. You need other people there. So making sure that everyone is doing their job and pulling their weight is essential to success. And I've definitely seen how that translates into not only student government, but just like the workforce and any career or job that you're pursuing later on in life.
And I love hearing that mentoring's your favorite. That one's kind of mine, too. Just like that personal relationship of like directly empowering and coaching someone. I just think that's like the best one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've made friends in SGA that I will keep for the rest of my life. Jackson's my vice president and Michael Wheeler is my chief of staff. And I've never had brothers, but I imagine that they are probably the closest thing to it. I told them one day they'll be in my wedding, and they were like, please don't put me in your wedding. But they definitely will be. You know, they're my best friends, and you just get so close whenever you work with these people for so long.
Yeah. What do you see as the biggest issue facing students at the University of Kentucky today?
I would say affordability is probably the number one. You know, mental health is also very important, so is safety and a magnitude of other things, but I think affordability is the number one priority that students want addressed right now. I remember when I started looking at colleges my senior year of high school back in 2021, 2022, I was blown away by how much higher education just costs in general. Neither of my parents, you know, attended college, so we were all unfamiliar with this territory. And had it not been for signing on to the stunt team, I wouldn't have been able to attend UK. So I think there's so many students out there, especially in Kentucky and rural Kentucky, where they don't really have opportunities or they're just not aware of what they have at their disposal, you know, what scholarships to apply for and things like that. So they sometimes can be left behind. And I think it's really important to, you know, advocate that our tuition stays the same or it doesn't increase. And if it does, our minimum wage needs to increase as well. You know, our minimum wage hasn't increased since 2009, but our tuition rates have increased, I think, by like 35% or something since 2009. So making sure that we're closing that gap and, you know, making it easier for more Kentuckians to get education is really important.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear. Like, I mean, affordability, that, you know, of course, concern for students. We're also seeing, you know, the political divide, like both political parties say that that's like also a universal struggle
absolutely.
For Americans across the board.
Yeah, I know. Not just, you know, tuition, but also housing, especially in Lexington. That is a huge thing right now. You know, even books, clothes, food, gas, everything. It's all just rising and soaring. And I think it's a pretty scary time for, you know, a lot of students. They think that they're not going to be able to buy a house one day and things like that. So attaining a degree in higher education, I think, is really crucial and really important to get a better paying job. But we also have to make sure that a lot of fellow Kentuckians have access to get that degree.
And I like how you mentioned, like, particularly the struggles for students in rural Kentucky. Like, how have you and your role and the work you've done, like, I guess just tried to support, like, you know, all the students from across the state, particularly, I mean, I'm thinking of those out in eastern Kentucky where I'm from, but also in Western Kentucky, but all, while also, of course, helping students in Louisville and Lexington, the bigger cities.
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up right outside of Louisville, so, you know, we had access to transportation and running water, and, you know, it was a 10-minute drive to downtown Louisville, so I was exposed to a lot of things, and I always had resources at my disposal, but, you know, especially with recent natural disasters that have occurred in Kentucky in recent years, there's been a lot of flooding, there's been tornadoes, and it's, you know, really devastated entire communities. You know, there are still places in eastern Kentucky that don't have running water. Mm. And while we should focus on making higher education more, you know, accessible, we also need to address the basic needs of a lot of Kentuckians. So I think that it starts from the bottom and moves its way up. You know, you got to advocate for everyone to have their basic needs, and then from there you can set them up for success. And I've really tried to do that with a lot of students. You know, so many students from or at UK come from out of state or rural Kentucky and just different areas with different experiences and perspectives. So just trying to understand where they came from, because I can't be, you know, 30,000 students and I can't possess all their perspectives. But sitting down with them and hearing their testimonies, I think, is so important. And I love talking to students and hearing their life story. I think it's so important.
I hadn't even thought about, like you mentioning, of course, out-of-state students. UK is a big major school, so you got to, of course, incorporate them, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, I am the only girl that is in my house right now. I live with 8 other girls, and I am the only one that was born in Kentucky.
Oh,
and
wow.
All the rest of them are from Indiana or Michigan and all other places, you know, all across the nation. So hearing their perspectives of why they chose UK is also very special, because I know that it's a flagship university for our state, but it's also recognized on a national level, and a lot of students have an appeal to come to UK and pursue education here.
That's awesome. And how do you see that, like, you know, us bringing in so many top students, I mean, from the state, but also from outside the state, like, how is that, like, helping empower Kentucky?
Yeah, I think that it's really important to have a lot of people, you know, moving to Kentucky and wanting to be here, instead of it being vice versa. A lot of people want to leave the state and go to these big cities and things. I think it just really showcases that Kentucky is such a special state.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone that I've talked to that has moved here from a different state has said that they just love the hospitality. You know, we have that Southern hospitality. We care. Mm-hmm. We help our neighbors. You know, a lot of us will take the shirt off our back to help someone. And I think that's really important. That really showcases what it is to be a Kentuckian in our Commonwealth.
Yeah. It's really great to, like, to just, like, that we're doing that to help students here and to help students abroad. That makes me think of one reason I chose U of L was the McConnell Scholars Program.
Yeah.
Senator McConnell wanted to, like, stop the brain drain of people leaving Kentucky. It's like,
absolutely.
Okay, I want, like, some top students, or, well, I want top students and top leaders to, like, be staying here in Kentucky, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I am, I'm on a pre-law track, so
okay.
I'm applying to law schools and stuff, and, you know, I've never experienced anything really outside of Kentucky, so I would love to travel. I would love to, you know, maybe go somewhere else, but Kentucky's always going to be home, and I definitely see myself moving back here and living here, and I have my family here and my friends, so I can't imagine, you know, moving elsewhere and pursuing opportunities for a lifetime.
I completely empathize with that. Like, I went to law school after graduating U of L.
Yeah.
I did teaching first for a while, did a fun job with that, and then went out. But, like, and I was in law school in D.C., but I felt that calling to come back home. And I'm like, I want to come back here, want to make an impact here, want to move our Commonwealth forward. It was partly, I'll admit, like, I was in D.C. during COVID and just watching Andy doing his press conferences every day. I'm you know what? I got to be back home.
And I got to be back home.
I got to be there. Like,
yes.
I got to be doing that.
I remember him, you know, getting on the news every night and listing off the names of the individuals that had lost their lives. And I think that no matter where you fall on a political spectrum, just having, you know, humanity during times like those when we're on a crisis, but, you know, really just being compassionate and giving everyone grace, I think is the most important thing. And I'll always remember that, not just because it was crazy, but just because we had a governor that was really protecting our citizens, I think. So
yeah, it's a great, great role model. I know, you know, some of the items you mentioned affecting UK students, like affordability and housing in particular, like, I mean, I guess we're seeing those as, like, challenges across, you know, for college students across the country. Like, how do you look at what's happening across other colleges, other universities, and, like, incorporate that into what the work you're doing at UK?
Yeah, I think, like I said, affordability is a huge thing, you know, for Kentucky students right now, but it's also felt across the nation. A lot of students are, you know, really worried about pursuing, you know, a degree in law school or med school or anything like that. You know, you have to take out loans, and especially with a lot of federal grants being canceled and, you know, loan forgiveness being stopped and all of these different things. It's a scary time for students. And I think now more than ever, we need people to advocate for students and advocate for the affordability of higher education and also the opportunities that it brings. I think mental health, like I said earlier, is also a huge thing. I personally have always struggled with anxiety, so I understand that being a college student is not easy. You have a lot on your plate, and it can really wear you down. You can get burnout. So making sure that we provide resources to students and students know what those resources are is really, really important. And I think that's something that my vice president and I have really tried to do is highlight, you know, TRACS or the VIP Center or any other counseling center that we have at UK and know that no one should be ashamed to get help when they need it.
I think that's a really great message. And I appreciate you admitting that, like, you know, having to deal with that anxiety. I mean, yeah. I deal with that a lot, but I still try to be a leader. I don't know if I'm good at it, but I kind of like to think that I feel like anxious leaders sometimes make the best leaders.
Yeah, absolutely. You can resonate with, you know, your peers and your team and say, you know, I am not confident in myself. You know, every day I wake up and I'm like, oh my gosh, should I have made that decision? Should I not have? You know, I'm always second guessing myself, but that's the beauty of being human. You know, we all have our faults. We all struggle with things internally, and knowing that no one's alone in this battle. No one, you know, has to fight their battles silently or not tell anyone. And it's really important to just lean on your peers and open up and, you know, share your concerns, your fears, and get those resources and help.
In addition to, like, thinking about, you know, looking at what's happening at other colleges, do you ever, like, collaborate with or partner with, like, other student body presence at other schools?
Yeah. This summer, our SGA went to Austin, Texas for our annual SEC exchange. So we got to meet all the other SEC schools, student governments, and I got to meet all of their presidents. So it was really cool to hear them and, you know, what they're doing at their schools. We brought a lot of ideas back to UK, and one of those was our annual campus safety walk that we have now implemented, where SGA members and administrators at UK go around campus at night and look at spots where it's not as lit as it should be, or, you know, there's potholes or there's something that may make students feel unsafe. And then we collaborate with parking and transportation and auxiliary services to make sure that we have those areas lit and safe for students that are traveling around campus at night. And then as far as the Kentucky student body presidents, we have collaborated throughout my entire term. Every month that we meet at a different school. So we've gone to EKU, U of L, Moorhead, and then last month we hosted them at UK. So it's really cool. I've never been to EKU or Moorhead, so being able to go there, see their campuses and what it's like was really, really cool. And I think something that we all want to prioritize is, you know, the needs of Kentuckian students. And like I said, affordability and mental health are probably the number two things on our radar. So seeing what we can do, how we can collaborate, and how we can advocate for not only our individual schools, but just Kentuckians in general is really cool.
That's awesome. I didn't realize that level of, like, collaboration. Especially when you said, like, you're all meeting, I'm like, oh, you all meet, like, virtually every month. But, like, you actually go to the school. That's awesome.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I know Murray State, like, they are so far away to, you know, Lexington. But they always make the drive. They're committed. They're dedicated. And I think it's also really cool to just experience, you know, another college town in the state of Kentucky. You know, they went to a women's basketball game, so they got to see what UK athletics is like. And then we got to go to an Eastern Kentucky game. So seeing what their atmosphere is like, what their student section is, all of that is just really cool. And it really shows that, you know, we're all one. We're all students at the same time. And we're all going through everything together, despite what school we go to. We all face the same struggles and all of that.
In addition to seeing, like, what's going on across the state with, like, you know, other colleges, you know, you kind of mentioned earlier, of course, like, seeing funding and spending cuts happening federally. But overall, like, how do you look at what's happening across the nation, but also across the world? And, like, how do you incorporate that into your leadership at UK?
Yeah. You know, we have over 34,000 students. I think we're close to 39,000 students now. So everyone has a different perspective, a different experience, different religious beliefs, different, you know, political beliefs. And just trying to stay very unbiased and grounded while advocating for those students. You know, I think the main thing is we as students all want the same thing. We want a better education. We want things to be more affordable. We all have the common goals, but I think our approach to getting that may just differ. And so sitting down with people, really having grace and compassion and saying, we want the same thing, we just have different routes of how to get there, is really important. And I try to do my best, you know, with focusing on how diverse our student body is and how not every single student may agree with what I am doing, but I just have to protect the collective good and do what I think is best.
And with that, it's great to hear, like, that you're embracing that diversity. Like, I know we've seen in education a lot of, like, controversy at the state and national level around, like, diversity, equity, and inclusion and accessibility. I like to add the A on ICE work, yeah, and disability work. But with DEI or DEIA work, you know, we've seen a lot of cuts happening there, too. How do you, like, look at DEI and the work you're doing? You know, again, what's happening, like, with attacks or reviews of it happening at the, local, state, and federal level?
Yeah. I know one of the biggest things for me is I'm a first-generation college student. So UK used to do a pinning ceremony for the first-gen graduates where, you know, they get pinned right before graduation. They have their own ceremony. And, you know, due to these regulations, that was banned, that was canceled, and it won't happen again. So that was really disheartening. And I remember having a call with the CARES first-generation student organization on campus and asking them what can student government and me as a student leader do to advocate for first-generation college students or students that are coming from unrepresented backgrounds. And they said, just, you know, keep them at the forefront of your brain, keep them at the forefront of all that you do. And something that SGA has really tried to do is reach out to those students that may not be involved on campus, may not have found, you know, their community or anything like that. We want everyone to feel welcome. We keep our door open. Even if you want to come and take a nap in my office, I wouldn't care, you know. I just want to make sure that they feel at home. And I think one thing that we've really tried to do is incorporate lapel pins. And we have made lapel pins for so many students that are graduating this May. So if you are a first-gen student, if you're, you know, from a different religious background, or you're, you know, you immigrated here, you're an international student, we have something that you can find solace in. And that represents just being a student that may be underrepresented at UK.
And with hearing, you know, it's great to hear it because, yeah, like UK is also, you know, we mentioned it's a huge draw to students across the country, but also, like, there's a huge international student body there. It draws in some top students from across the world. Like, how do you kind of try to help those students and think about, like, okay, you know, when they go back home potentially, like, or they go back to another country, like, how do you try to help them at UK to be like, hey, you want to, like, help them empower Kentucky somehow back home, or, like, you know, how do you engage them to learn?
Yeah, I think it says a lot that we have a lot of international students, that we have students that want to come to UK. I think that speaks volumes to not only the University of Kentucky, but just our Commonwealth and what we have to offer. So it always warms my heart when I meet an international student and they always have great things to say about UK. And I think a lot of students that may be from Kentucky or just from the United States in general kind of take advantage of what higher education is. You know, I think it is a privilege and it's an opportunity that so many don't have. So getting to hear their perspectives and how much they love the university is always heartwarming. And I want to provide, you know, as many opportunities to them as possible. You know, they didn't come here with friends from high school. You know, they're not coming here exposed to the same things that I was when I was in high school. So making sure that they know what resources are available to them is so important. Making sure that we have a Canvas tab for, you know, not only mental health resources, but financial aid and all these different things so that they can access it at their fingertips whenever they would like to is really, really important. And I hope that, you know, wherever they go after they graduate or after, you know, they move on with their life, that they'll always remember that UK tried to support them and make them feel as welcomed as possible.
Of course, you know, your role is like leading in higher education, but you mentioned with affordability, a lot of students like aren't pursuing that higher education, whether they're going right into the workforce, going to trade school, going to community college. Like, you know, that's, of course, that part is not your job. But I guess I'm just still curious and asking, like, how do you still think about students going that route? Like, how do you try to, like, you know, I guess still try to support them, or just how do you, like, view that, I guess?
Yeah, I think a lot of students right now are wanting to, you know, pursue medical school or law school and, you know, all of these graduate level degrees. I applied to law school within this cycle, and this is the highest rate that we've ever had, the most applicants we've ever had. So it's competitive, but it also shows how many students are wanting to, you know, pursue this education. And I think being an attorney is always wanting to help someone, right? You're always wanting to fight for someone that may not have a voice. So that's really important. But other than that, you know, I know a lot of students are wanting to go in the workforce. I personally never want to graduate college. I want to stay an undergraduate forever. But I know a lot of people are ready to enter the workforce. They're ready to make money. And right now, it's pretty hard to find a job compared to years prior. So making sure that we have education at the forefront and also tying in education to the workforce and providing students with access to job applications or alumni that can help them get a job is really important. I know a lot of students may not know where to look or where to apply for a job. I was helping my roommate the other day set up her LinkedIn. And so it's really important that, you know, we have these resources exposed to students and that they are aware of what is out there and what's attainable.
Yeah. Also, if you thought it was very expensive at undergrad, yeah, law school will be.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'll be paying off my loans for, it's been years, still paying them off.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm praying that, you know, I get a good scholarship and things like that, but it'll all work out, you know. Don't stress until you need to is kind of my motto, so.
Yeah. What advice would you give to individuals, to organizations, but also like to movements, to really to anyone who wants to put Kentucky on the national and the global map, especially when it comes to like empowering young people like you have?
Yeah, I think my generation is very unique. You know, we grew up in a time with Instagram Reels and TikTok and things like that. So we've always been exposed to things that our parents were not. Mm-hmm. You know, we have everything at our fingertips. But with that being said, we also have access to learn more than our parents did. So making sure that our students and just our Kentuckians that, you know, are younger are aware of how they can use social media and how they can use technology to their advantage and empowering them. You know, I think it's so important to have representation, whether that be, you know, race, gender or age. There's not a lot of young people that are in politics or in government offices, and to have young leaders that are getting elected, that are speaking up, that are fighting, you know, to improve the lives of students is so, so important. And I know I met a state representative yesterday, and he's in his late 20s, I believe. So that was really, really cool to see how, you know, he was a former student body president at Morehead State, and that translated to being, you know, a state representative. And I think students just want to see representation.
What are leadership lessons you've learned from different kind of like pop culture and literary sources, from books, movies, or even television?
Yeah, I love reading. I am a history and American government nerd. So me and my mom have always grown up reading the same books. She has her own library in our house, and it is full of autobiographies and memoirs. And so that is actually all I read. I love hearing people's stories and their testimonies of, you know, their challenges in life and how that translated into advocating for people like themselves. One of the best books I've ever read is The Other Westmore. And he is now, you know, I think the governor of Maryland. But I read his book years back before he was the governor. And, you know, I think his perspective was so unique because he got to see the disparities in his community and his population. And although he did not struggle with these personally, he saw how other people did. And that translated into advocating for people who didn't have a voice. And I think that's always important. I've also read Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance and then Hill Women by Cassie Chambers Armstrong. And those basically have, you know, the same storyline. They both grew up in rural communities where, you know, electricity may not have been accessible to them. Same with running water, different things like that. You know, they had high rates of addiction and opioid use. So watching how their stories led into different routes of politics was really cool to see. I think that, as I said previously, we all want the same goal. We just have different approaches of how we get there. So seeing how they are leaders, you know, within their communities or even our nation, like J.D. Vance, it is really cool to see, you know, their backgrounds and what led them to be a leader and what they put at the forefront of what they do.
And I appreciate hearing fellow history nerd. I was also a big, big history nerd reading those autobiographies growing up, too. Do you have a favorite U.S. president?
Oh, gosh. Might be controversial, but I have to say it. Obama, my dad got to go on the train with him and meet him and go to a inauguration ball. So I was too young. I think I was like 4 years old. So really upset that I wasn't able to go. But with that being the only president, you know, anyone in my family has ever met. And, you know, we got to be on one of his campaign commercials. I was like 4 years old, swinging on a swing. I think it was really cool that he wanted to highlight working class families in Kentucky. And so I would probably have to say that, but I'm biased.
That's awesome. You got to be in that commercial.
Yeah.
I got to be in a, I think it was like over 10 years ago in a, this is a gubernatorial or Senate candidate, one of their commercials. And I was technically in it, but my head was cut out.
Okay.
So most of my body was
right.
in it.
Right. You were still in it. Yeah. I would put that on a resume, you know?
And then who would you say are your kind of your most important and like inspirational leadership role models? Both, I'll say both fictional and then real figures.
Okay. Honestly, it's cliche, but I would have to say my dad. I love my mom dearly, but my dad is definitely more of the outspoken kind of leader in the household. And he has worked with, you know, government officials at local, state, and federal levels. And he really just tries to advocate for students or not students, I'm sorry, just advocate for Kentuckians. And he works for the United Auto Workers. So always trying to fight for better wages and, you know, better opportunities for his coworkers. And you know, he gets mad at sometimes, but he does it because he's passionate, and he never lets work affect his personal life. You know, he leaves that separate, and seeing how he can separate those two things and really have a balance is really important. And I think he just instilled in me to love everyone and, you know, treat everyone how you want to be treated and give everyone grace and compassion, because, you know, we're all struggling with things and you never know what someone's going through. So watching him lead and his approach to it has really transformed my approach to life.
I think that's a great, that's something I've been working on my whole life, is leaving that, you know, worker school at home.
Yes.
Or, you know, separating that from home, I guess. But
yes, it's hard. It's hard, especially when we have, you know, computers that we can like bring home and just like get in our bed and start doing work. It's like, no, I got to close it. So.
And I think that ties in well to kind of like the mental health advocacy and work you're doing for the students. Like, yeah, I think it sounds like you learned some of that from your dad and the work he does.
Yeah, absolutely. Before he, you know, was a full-time employee of the United Auto Workers, he worked at the local union, local union 862. And there he was a resource for people that were struggling with addiction or alcoholism. And he would help them get into rehabilitation centers or just get the support that they need. And I think a lot of them were struggling mentally. So my dad would sit down with these individuals and really listen to, you know, why they were struggling with these things, you know, what led them to use drugs or alcohol as a form to escape their mind. And really listening and understanding, I think, made him a more understanding person. And he's always instilled that, you know, me and my sister also to never use drugs, but, you know, that you should always reach out to someone whenever you need help and, you know, just give everyone grace. So.
Amazing. And then who, do you have any favorite fictional leadership role models?
Honestly, I don't read fiction. I know all of my roommates do. They tell me that I need to get into it. There's like a whole series, I think Colleen Hoover. It's like a big thing right now. I just can't get into it. I don't know why. I love autobiographies and memoirs, and it's just so crazy, you know, the books that I read that are someone's real life and experiences. But I don't know. I just love I love all the politicians that, you know, are outspoken and, you know, they'll do whatever they can to advocate for the people that they represent. And then, like I said, Obama, but I'm biased, so...
That's awesome. So, yeah, definitely, like I said, check out The West Wing. I think you'll,
yes,
you'll find some of your favorite figures, particularly Josh Lyman, fellow Deputy Chief of Staff.
Yes, I need to watch it. I'm going to watch it this weekend. I have nothing to do, so.
And then are there any, like, youth leaders or youth advocates you especially admire or kind of follow?
Yeah. I know I mentioned Lizzie, the former student body president, but also her vice president, Jason Marcus. I was so intimidated by him when I first met him, but that's just because he's outspoken, and what you see is what you get with him. But he is amazing. He is in law school now, so I never want to get in an argument with him. But he really knows, you know, how to get what he wants and, you know, to push forward his agenda. And he does that in a way that is so meticulous and precise, and he knows exactly how to influence people to help students just across our Commonwealth. And I think it's really important that you know, he has experience as a leader and now he's going to law school. So, you know, he sees different perspectives from all over. There's also some peers in SGA right now. One of them is my childhood best friend. And seeing how she kind of went down the same route as me and is now in student government is really, really cool. And she's amazing. She is the most caring, compassionate person I've ever met. And seeing how intentional she is with the people that she's serving is just really, really cool.
Amazing. And you mentioned earlier you're planning to go to law school. You know, always interested to hear for young leaders, like, what the big next steps will be. Do you know where you might go to law school and what kind of law you want to practice?
Yeah. Right now I'm looking at Chicago because the type of law that I want to practice is criminal defense and then possibly specializing in drug court. My first job, actually, that I worked, I believe I started my freshman year of high school. I worked with an individual who was recovering from a substance use disorder, and she had lost, you know, custody of her kids, and she was homeless. And fast forward to today, she has her bachelor's degree, and she's now helping people in Oldham County's drug court, you know, get sober and have these opportunities. So watching, you know, how rehabilitation programs and centers really transformed her life was amazing, and that's something that I want to be a part of, and I really want to help people, you know, get the help that they need instead of, you know, punishing them and putting them in, you know, these cells and just letting them, you know, sit there and reflect on their thoughts, because we've seen, you know, how recidivism is deeply correlated to, you know, our programs that we have within our prisons and our jails. So that's something that I would love to do. I would love to maybe run for local office one day. We'll see. We'll see what happens down the line.
But I'm really inspired to hear, you know, you've talked about it earlier too, but like the mental health advocacy work and the reform work and the recovery work, a lot of fields I've worked in too. So that's,
yeah,
I really resonate with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And with local office, do you think, would that be back in Oldham County or here?
I would love to move back to Oldham County. You know, that's where my parents are and I have two nephews. So they're my whole world and I would love to be close to them whenever I can. But also, if there's a community that really needs a leader to step up and just advocate and not be afraid to, you know, slam a fist down on a table and, you know, try to help people, I'm happy to do it. You know, I might not be the best person for the job, but I will try my hardest to do the best work that I can.
And, like, how do you see, like, the leadership lessons you've learned here at, you know, UK, like, continuing to shape your future, and how do you think about the impact you hope to make in your future career and, you know, the long life you have ahead?
I think this past year I've completely transformed as a person. I came into college, you know, without a roadmap. No one in my family had ever attended before, so I was really shy, I was really timid, I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life, and especially SGA has really, you know, transformed my confidence and just made me a very self-assured person. And over the last year, you know, I've been exposed to very public things. You know, you run a whole campaign that's public facing in front of 30 plus thousand students, and you know, people are able to comment anonymously on Yik Yak or say whatever they want about you, but being able to let those things roll off your back and realizing that, you know, these people are on a screen, you know, they're just typing it out, they don't actually know you, they don't know your character, has been something that I've had to learn the hard way, but also something that I will translate into my life post-college, that as long as you're doing the work that you know is rewarding and you're helping people and you have that as your backbone, all the other comments and the noise, you can just drain out.
Yeah. And then my last question, you know, we started the interview with your six-word story. I want to know, what do you hope to be your six-word legacy? Of course, you got a long legacy, long life ahead of you, but what are six words you hope people will remember when they think about your impact on Kentucky and on the world?
Yeah. I would say I hope they remember my advocacy, my intentionality, my determination, and probably how hardworking and resilient I was. I think resilience is something that we all could learn, and also perseverance within that is really important.
Amazing. Well, President Dowell, thank you so much for sharing your story and for taking the time for the interview. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This is amazing.
That wraps up my conversation with McKenna Dowell. From describing herself as shy and timid when she first stepped into student government, to working in a behind-the-scenes role, to now serving as student body president, her journey is a reminder that leadership isn't about being the loudest person in the room. It's about being accountable to the people you serve and by being a teammate, not just a boss. And I think she demonstrates a great commitment to not just students in Kentucky today, but to what she hopes to continue giving back to the Commonwealth in the future as her term ends. My next episode drops in May, and it features Jose Cubero, the mayor of Shepherdsville, Kentucky. Until then, remember to live local and think global, fellow changemakers.